Greetings and salutations, friends and followers of the Lively Arts. This is Jay Michaels, here once again in the Passion Pit, bringing you one-on-ones with some of the movers, shakers, and art makers in the indie scene. Now, dubiously, when you think about indie arts, you think a one-person band, you know, a small group, or one person with one great big idea. But that simply isn't true. Literally, not TRU. Bob Ost, a great playwright in his own right, founded Theater Resources Unlimited, get it, T-R-U, an organization that through classes and workshops and lectures by arts influencers opens the door for the new, the young, and the emerging artist. With Bob in your life, your work will always be true. Get it? Yeah, I know, I'm, yeah, all right. I played the joke too much, I get it. All right, Bob, take it away.
Hi, Jay.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Not bad. If I'm on the line, you're on the air.
Well, I'm on the air. Hello, everybody. And who am I? I am Bob Ost.
That's right. You are not one that I have to coax things out of you. So when I introduce you as the founder of Theater Resources Unlimited, where you are not only an artist but an influencer, I can then just turn the mic over to you, and so you can tell us exactly what Theater Resources Unlimited is and who Bob Ost is.
Well, hopefully those are two separate questions.
Indeed.
I'm actually a playwright, composer, lyricist. I was a playwright, composer, lyricist for years and years and years before I ever got the idea of starting an arts service organization. And actually, I didn't get the idea. It was sort of handed to me by the universe. I was basically sending my plays around and trying to get produced. And I would win awards and I wouldn't get produced. And I thought, there's something missing from this picture. What is it? And I came to the conclusion that I needed to know producers. So I started to hang out with a couple of artistic directors who had small not-for-profits. And I thought that they had magic wands and they waved them and plays happened. And then I started hanging around and I found out it's not quite that simple at all.
It's a much bigger wand, yes.
Oh, my God. It's I wish there was a wand.
Yeah.
The famous closet of money that everybody wants to know where it is.
Yeah, not in my apartment. So yeah, there you go.
I don't have one either.
Yeah.
Although I got a nice end of year surprise today. I got $1,000 grant that I wasn't expecting.
Oh, congratulations! That's wonderful.
So you're catching me in a happy mood.
Oh, even better.
I just came back to the bank.
Oh, even better.
So there I am, not getting produced and becoming friendly with artistic directors of small theater companies and learning the difficult truth, which is that it's very, very difficult to get things produced.
Yeah.
In New York. It's producing is hard.
Yeah.
Hard, hard, hard. So I thought, well, what can I do to make this process a little easier for all of us? And so I invited three friends who had theater companies to come meet each other at my apartment and talk about what they were doing and find out maybe ways of helping each other and working together. I guess my theory was somebody was going to have a piece of the puzzle that someone else was missing, and together they were going to have a complete picture. It wasn't that simple either. But
nope.
They asked me whether they could invite people over, and I said, sure. And I wound up with 30 people in my living room.
Wow.
So I realized at that moment that there was a real need for community in our community.
Excellent.
These are all people. Yeah. I mean, it's a hard business, and sometimes New York seems unfriendly to those who are trying to get into the business and find a way into it, looking for that doorway in. And by creating an organization where people came together and talked about their successes and their challenges and what they needed and how they could help other people. This Theater Resources Unlimited was actually born because after that first meeting, at the end of it, I said, okay, guys, everybody's talked about your tough time producing and you found out that you're not the only one who's doing this crazy thing. Do you want to have another meeting? And everybody raised their hand. I had 30 hands go up, and I knew that that was it. I had to do this. So I continued once a month having people in my living room until somebody donated a space outside of my home. And that's how True was born.
And the rest is history.
Well, yeah, there's history that's still in the making.
Of course.
What's happened over the years is I've basically learned a lot more about the business of theater. I've learned that artists need to think like business people sometimes, even if they don't want to. And we try to teach people the skills that will help them navigate the business better. So that's what we do.
Now, you said about pieces of the puzzle. Over the years, have you yourself seen new pieces of the puzzle pop in? Like you have agendas. You have razor sharp agendas for every True event. Do you find at the end of an event, you'll say, "Oh my goodness, I need to talk about contracts. Wait a minute, I never mentioned this, or I didn't know we needed that." Do you find it still a learning experience for you after all these years?
That's a tough question. Learning experience for me. Yeah, hopefully I learn something new every time I have new speakers. But my fear is, as a person running the organization and moderating the monthly – oh, we do monthly panels. And something a little bit more concrete than the generalities I just said. We actually once a month have panels about issues that I think are relevant to producers and producing. And some of them are basic, and some of them don't change a whole lot. I mean, marketing certainly has evolved.
Mm-hmm.
But the conversation about marketing hasn't really made any great leaps since we started talking about social media, and that's been a while now. And by the way, there still is no evidence that social media sells tech tickets, but it does help spread awareness.
Of course.
So a lot of the basic topics feel like the same thing for me, and I'm always pleased and surprised when people come up after me and say, "Oh my God, thank you so much for this information. I didn't know." Just because I do this for 25 years and I've run these panels, and just because I've heard so much of it, I always have to remind myself that it's really new and necessary for so many other people who don't know it. So we keep sharing. It's about sharing information.
I'm glad you said about sharing, and you made a point of about community. Do you think, considering the way off-Broadway, the whole point of independent theater is to be independent, do you feel that's a hindrance as well? It's like there's a community, but we don't know there's a community because everyone's doing it themselves. Do you think the concept of organization within off-Broadway is necessary?
I think it would be useful. The other side of it is that Broadway is branded. So people come to New York, they seek Broadway. Everything else that's happening in the city, which is an enormous amount, needs to really fight for their place in the spotlight.
I'm glad you said that. Now, Broadway is a community. You might be in Wicked, but you know everything of what's going on in Lion King, and you know what happened with SpongeBob and all of that. Everybody seems to know each other's business, for lack of a better term. Do you think off-Broadway would benefit from having that same kind of community?
I think off-Broadway could be just as good at being busybodies as Broadway. I think they've got the talent. The basics are there. It's harder. We've been trying to brand off. See, off-Broadway, it was identified like 15, 20 years ago, maybe longer ago, and in panels that I've had, people have said that the problem with the concept of off-Broadway is it distances itself from the brand that everybody's looking for, which is Broadway.
Right.
So you really, in order to be competitive, to call yourself off-Broadway, it's not being boastful. It's a little humble. So that's one of the reasons why I think it's important to try to find a different brand. That's why indie theater, I think, is an effective and useful brand.
Completely.
And indie theater isn't always exactly off-Broadway either. The terms are so loose and nebulous sometimes. We know what Broadway is. The only way we can define off-Broadway is basically through the equity contracts. Equity says anything in a theater that's 500 seats or more is Broadway. Anything that's in a theater that's 100 to 500 to 499 seats is off-Broadway. So that's a quantitative definition of off-Broadway, but it certainly doesn't give a sense of an aesthetic or a point of view. So I think there still needs to be some work, a lot of work done to identify what is unique and exciting about off-Broadway. And I don't think people can agree on that. So that goes back to what you were saying in the first place, which is everybody's running around doing their own thing. How do you create a unified community out of people that are all doing their own thing their own way?
Right.
I don't know. So any viewers out there who have the answer to this, you can you can redefine off-Broadway for us and help us be a better business.
See, I think you already have. True is one of those rare meccas where people simply come together. You know, you have a meeting of the Broadway somebodies, and there are so many artists who won't go because I'm not Broadway. But the joy of off-Broadway and off-off-Broadway, or as most people now say happily, independent theater, it's a place to go. Whether you have $60,000 to spend, or you have $6,000, or you have $600, or you have no money, they can get to one of your meetings. They can get to one of your panels and feel like they're part of a community. So I'd love to see more of that.
It's interesting. A lot of the people that are the Broadway people really aren't just defined by Broadway. They reach out beyond that. I'm doing a panel, actually my panel in January 24th, is called Getting Past the Gatekeepers, Opening Up Doors of Opportunity, Opening Up Doors for Greater Diversity in Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Opening Up the Doors for Greater Diversity in Theater. And I'm doing this with Tanya Pinkins. Now, Tanya Pinkins, if anybody knows her, she's a Broadway star. She's got a Tony Award, and she's been nominated, and she's been star of TV series. She's been on a couple of soap operas. So she's a big deal, except that she really is a very generous spirit who wants to reach out in our community, and she's doing this panel with me on the 24th, which is certainly not going to deal with Broadway at all. We're going to basically be looking at what's going on in the regional theaters, and even the regional theaters here are like Roundabout and Lincoln Center and
sure.
Manhattan Theater Club, but that's a whole discussion of why they're regional theaters.
Yep.
We'll talk about that some other time.
Yes.
But she wants to raise awareness. She's very political, and she wants to raise awareness, and she wants to talk about what's necessary in order to find people around the country who are producing, who will have a vested interest in telling the stories of a more diverse group of people than what we normally see. She wants people's stories to be told.
She's telling one now, actually. She is directing. Around that time, she'll be, I think it's either closing or it'll be in the middle of the run. She's doing a play called Till We Meet Again, which will be at the 14th Street Y. She's directing that play. It's written by Glory Cadogan.
Glory Cadogan. Yes, I know.
Yeah.
I know Glory very well.
Oh, indeed.
Tanya's heart is really in social awareness. She doesn't mind having Broadway success, but I think that she's a great spirit.
She's not alone. She's quite brilliant and quite articulate, which I've discovered recently having worked with her, and she's marvelous. Jim Kierstead is another name that pops up like that. Pat Addis. These are people who could be defined by Broadway, but they're defined more by being artists, which is really wonderful. Do you think
and that
might
that
I'm sorry?
The ones you mentioned, Jim Kierstead and Pat Addis, for instance, those are producers. People think of producers as being, I don't know what they think of them. The one thing I try to teach is that producers are not ATM machines, but they think of them as being commercial. Yeah, Jim and Pat and a lot of the others, including people on my board like Cheryl Weisenfeld, they are all very much involved in the commercial Broadway scene, but they also are supportive and nurturing of not-for-profit theater around the city.
Completely.
Developing new works that may never see the light of day on Broadway, but are important and are worth producing.
Well, they cross they cross party lines, if you will, and they will go to independent theater projects to see that caliber. I was just speaking to Jim on the air, and he was even saying he'll go and see a play, and if it's really good, he's going to grasp it. He's open to the art and not just the commerce of it, which is really wonderful.
Absolutely. And I like to say the true attracts those kind of people. We attract the good guys.
Obviously.
We attract
the
generous spirits.
Yeah.
Ones that respect art.
What's next for you? Playwright Ost, what's next for you?
Well, I don't find lots of time to work on my own art. Running True is basically, it's like 24/7 almost. But I am working on a play right now. I can honestly say that I've been working on it all week. It's a new play that's it's a gay coming out story that takes place in the 80s, and it's a coming of age story. And I think it's pretty funny. I'm sitting here and laughing.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I'll be my own audience. Hopefully not. But it's something that I would probably submit to the Fresh Fruit Festival at some point. I had a wonderful experience there. The last show of mine that was seen in New York was actually 2014 Fresh Fruit Festival, my musical Angel in My Heart. And it really was received spectacularly well. And
Fresh Fruit Festival is like it's like the best kept secret in New York. It's quality. It's an amazing festival. It's just nobody. Sometimes people don't know it's there. I'm thrilled to be working with them because I think that they have such a message, and they take quality works and I want more people to see their stuff. I'm glad that you were a part of it. I'm glad that you're a proponent of them.
Oh, absolutely, and just to state the obvious for listeners, it's LGBTQ,
yeah,
for the most part. But it's a broad range of work. They're very open to non-traditional as well as traditional, and they're open to dance and music and film and everything else.
Oh yeah,
I'm strictly a theater guy. At my age, I won't say how old I am, but at my age, I still haven't had the nerve to write a screenplay. I've thought about writing a screenplay. I just can't get myself to take the leap. But I love writing plays, and I love writing musicals. And right now, the play I'm working on is a straight play. It's a gay straight play, but it's a straight play.
There you go.
I'm hoping to finish it in the next couple of months, and I'm hoping to do something to get it up and started. I advise other people on how to get their work up and seen. And of course, I'm not nearly as good at it as I am at advising other people to do it, but hopefully I'll take my own advice and get my stuff seen. And there's a lot of reasons why people create theater and create art. The core reason is self-expression. It's you have something to say, you have something you want to express. Then the next thing is really communication. You want to have to remember that we want to communicate. So that's where kind of the editor comes in. When you've expressed yourself, and then you have to look at it with a critical eye and figure out whether it's saying what you want it to say and whether it's reaching people.
Why do you do it? Why do you write? You know how hard it is. You tell everyone every day how hard it is. Why do you do it?
Well, no, I tell everybody how hard it is to produce. Writing is a joy. It's a dream if you have the time to do it and you have the discipline to get down and sit there and work on things.
But you don't put it in a drawer and you're happy. You then want others to see it.
Yeah,
What's your reason?
I want to share my message. I want to share my experience. I'm old enough to know that any experience that I've had that has been really meaningful and life-changing for me is going to resonate with some people. There are always people that will come up to you and say, I feel like you wrote that play for me, or I feel like you wrote that song for me. And I did. I wrote it basically based out of my own heart, my own passion, but with the intention of reaching someone who will understand the experience that I'm kind of trying to communicate, and they'll experience it at a gut level. I mean, then there's other people that just like stuff, you know, it's had a good time at your show.
Right.
But you really want to get those people who can say to you, seeing that work helped me understand what I've been going through, or helped me understand myself, or you know, even changed my life.
How's that feel for you? How's that feel for you when someone walks over and says, that play spoke to me, I'm a different person because of it, I now understand what happened with my mother, my brother, my lover? How do you feel when they do that?
It's the best thing in the world. It's why I do this. Interesting story now that you say that. Somebody found me on Facebook, singer-actor found me on Facebook, and he emailed me timidly, and I responded to him. It turned out that 10, 15 years ago, when he was 16 or 17, he discovered my CD, which is called A Special Place, Songs from the Heart. And he said it was his favorite CD. It was the background music for his entire developmental years from 16 until he moved to New York.
Wow.
And it was one of the reasons why he moved to New York. And he still emails me, Facebook messages me, and says, I can't believe I'm talking to you. Because you changed my life. And you don't know who you don't know where your ripples go.
There you go.
You just don't know.
That's right.
And it just makes me fall in love with the world, which is something that's very hard to do these days.
Oh my God.
Political situation. But I still believe in the basic goodness of humanity, and I believe that there's something good in almost everybody.
That's nice. That's nice of you to say. So teacher, what have you learned from your school? You've had panelists come through your doors for 25 years. You had everyone from Broadway folk to the guy who shows you the best way to print your postcards. What have you learned when you now produce, when you now write and all of that? What have you learned? What's the message? You're so old, as you say. Chances are our birth certificates were printed on the same tree. But what if you were going to give a message to someone, what have you learned from seeing all these people and all these journeys? What have you learned as an artist?
Well, okay. I've learned that there's certain basic principles that if you follow, you'll increase your chances of success. If you're a playwright, there's dramaturgical principles. If it's producing, there are basic things that you have to do as a producer. There's a step 1 through 25 that you have to take. A lot of people think that they can break the rules and not follow the rules and do it differently. And maybe every now and then somebody succeeds that way. But know the rules. Whether it's the rules of producing or the rules of writing, the rules of music, whatever they are, know them so that you can increase your odds of communicating effectively and getting things done in a successful way. It's not that there's no rule for police, but just understand that you can't kind of get away all the time with saying, oh, I know I'm not supposed to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. Sometimes you'll get by, but go back and look at it again and see if the rule will make it better. And again, I hate to sound rigid because I'm not rigid about rules, but I do think that rules are incredibly useful in terms of helping us know which steps to take when.
And if we need to know the rules, where do we go? We go to Theater Resources Unlimited.
Well, we have a lot of rules that we teach. Gently, very gently.
Yep.
I mean, we have a workshop with how to write a musical that works, which is structural and dramaturgical and talks about the rules and not for the purpose of punishing people who break them, but simply saying, look, this has a hole in it here, and it probably wouldn't have had that hole if you'd followed this rule.
Good for you.
And more often than not, people go off and come back and say, my God, you were right. This really works much better.
Excellent. There you go. You're making your impact. Well, you knew that. You knew that already. Bob, thank you very much. This has been wonderful. I will make sure our listeners know exactly where to find you, where to find True, and if they're an artist, that's the place that they have to go to. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Jay.
I will talk to you soon.
Ciao. I hope so. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you. Ciao.
Bye.
Thank you, Bob. It is always a pleasure to hear from you. Now, Applaud lists, promotes, markets, and reviews the best of indie theater. You can't get applause without Applaud. But don't take my word for it.
Would you like more people to attend your show? At Applaud, we combine artificial intelligence and human intuition to expand your audience and increase ticket sales. For a limited time, we'll help you fill your seats free of charge to prove our value. That's right, we will promote your show at no cost if you begin right away. Sound good? For more information, email promote@applaud.com.
Okay. Now, what began as a discussion about her new play, which recently got published, I might add, turned into a deep discussion about her journey through the arts with a really engaging organization. Here's published playwright and player at Theater Pizzazz with some info for us all, Marcina Zakaria.
Hello.
Marcina.
Yes.
This is Jay Michaels. I put myself back on schedule, putting you back on schedule.
Terrific, Jay.
So
nice
to hear. If I'm on the phone, you're on the line. You're on the air.
Great. Oh, terrific. Good to hear.
So you have a zillion things going on. Firstly, congratulations. You're now a published author.
Thank you. I greatly appreciate that. Yes, Village, My Home. So Village, My Home was a play that I wrote, and the original production was at Theater for the New City, and it was a great success, actually. It was during the Dream Up Festival, and I was so proud of the cast and the crew and everyone who participated, and it's published now. It's on Amazon. I hope that many, many people will purchase it, and, rights are available if they hope to do it for a production. So
did the publishing come from the performance? Like someone came down to see it and said, this is great, we'll publish it, or was it a separate entity?
It was a separate entity. I went with a publisher that I had worked with, who's based out of Massachusetts near Boston, and they had published a monologue that I had written previously in their monologue selections book.
Well, that's
so
cool.
I said, let me see if they'll produce this whole short play, because it runs about 45 minutes.
Right.
So I submitted it, and they said, yeah, absolutely, let's publish this one. And, everything is so different these days with new technology people can just, go on Amazon. First of all, they can just Google your name, see what you've been working on. And then if you do have published works, they can just click on it or, freely find this kind of thing on Amazon, buy it on Kindle, and download it that minute. So if people want to read your work, it's really out there these days, and they can go ahead and see what you've been doing and really get not just the general sense that you do write, but that the context and the depth of the kind of material that you're interested in.
That's so cool. That is so cool.
Yeah.
I just asked another author who just got published again also, how does that feel? You are now part of posterity. I talk all about when I teach, I talk all about the Greek dramas and the reason we have these Greek tragedies, because they were part of contests and festivals, and so they survived.
Yeah.
The thousands of others that were in second and third place didn't. They are the ones that survived. So in 1,000 years, someone can rent your play. How does that feel to know you are perennial like that way?
Well, I have mixed feelings about it, actually. But how do you feel about this whole school of publish or perish? Do you believe in it?
On a certain level, I do. On a certain level, yeah. I think, and it comes down to the parable that we need to promote ourselves. We can't sit there and wait for the phone call. We need to get up and scream. And if that means publishing your work, if that means producing your work, if that means simply putting it out there, not waiting for someone else to do it, I think all forms of that are excellent.
Yeah, and I think that I agree in some ways. I feel like, people have to be able, if you do have a catalog of work, people have to be able to, in some way, get the work. They have to be able to access it. They
completely
have to be able to read it. And they have to have some sense of where you're coming from. Now, the other school is, you know, having gone to NYU's Tisch School of the Arts, I also believe in experimental theater. And having studied music, I also believe in improvisation. So a lot of that is never written down, you know?
Well, that's true.
So, yeah. So it's sort of, you know, created in the moment, and it's for a purpose that will, you know, sort of expire by the end of the day. And so part of me also believes in that act of creation as well, because it's really meant for the moment. So I think both matter. I mean, you know, if people ask me, you know, why am I an artist, and, you know, why do I do what I do, some of it is to be recognized and to be seen and to be heard. But some of it is just to make something in the moment that matters.
I think your philosophy actually is one that's grasped by more people than we know. When you look at social media, yes,
yeah,
everything we put on Twitter and Facebook will remain for the next 10,000 years. But then there's Snapchat that disappears in 24 hours. So I guess the improvisational realm is something that will never die as well, which is terrific.
Yeah. And I think it got a little difficult in around 2010, when everyone started really embracing the social media as, you know, the best great new thing. Everyone said, oh, I've gotta have Facebook. I've gotta have my LinkedIn. I've gotta have, you know, Instagram and all of this. And visual content became easier to create visual content, and also, you know, to get out there really quickly. But then you look at content, and you look at context, and you look at depth. And so you want there to be enough material that you've generated so that there's not only variation, there's also consistency. So, again, these are things that I'm always struggling with. You know, as an artist, not really – when I was doing work in the early 90s, it was a lot different than doing work now. Because the computer digital age has really created these new challenges, right?
Oh, my God.
And, you know, you think, oh, it's new, but is it really new? And if it's really new, is it so great? You know? And so we consider these things. And, you know, when I learned how to be a theater artist, a lot of it was about creating in the moment for the day and then having the work accumulate over time. And it's actually a sort of difficult argument these days, because sometimes the work can't accumulate appropriately. And sometimes, you know, great ideas kind of fall by the wayside, or they get tired a little bit too soon.
Right.
So it's a different world. But, you know, we have to embrace these challenges. We have to move forward with them. And, you know, we work with these new techniques, you know, at the same time as artists in other fields, you know.
Even we as artists have to evolve. We have to take our art and let it be digestible for today.
Yeah, and when I wrote Village My Home, I tell you, I did it as part of the Lit Space Grant Residency Program. So what I actually did was sit in a room adjacent to the New York Times building, because the Lit Space Grant Residency was actually held at the Time Center, which is actually located on 41st Street.
Right.
And so I actually was able to, you know, to go ahead and create this work. And I sat in the room and just, like, wrote it straight. And then the editing process was really not what I wanted it to be. But that's okay. I think that you have to just, you know, continue forward, persist, and eventually what's important to you will get out there.
When you talk about editing, a big thing, I'm a devotee of Orson Welles, and one of the things that they said about him in a psychological way was that he never let go of his movies. He would do these amazing films, but it took him forever to edit them because he just couldn't let them go. As an author, especially when we're talking publishing, what does it feel like to say, okay, that's it, it's out there, and it's done. It's now on paper. I can't suddenly erase it. How does it feel to let your child go?
It's sort of great, actually, Jay, and it's terrific. It's terrific, and I love that it's just sort of like a time capsule, right? It's out there. It's in black and white. It's a time capsule, and you know, if someone else wants to reinterpret it, that's fine. But all of the initial words are there, you know.
So, I think that's terrific. I think it's so terrific you said that. I, you know, so many times I expect someone, oh, it's so difficult to let go. There's so many ideas. I'm glad you said, yeah, goodbye, get out. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, I think we get into a lot of debates about what is real time and what is live time and what work is created in real and live time and whose time is it? And I think it's really a struggle, actually. I think it's an incredible struggle that we'll all get past, you know? But I feel like, you know, process is very different than it used to be. And for a theater director, I used to love running scenes over and over and over again, right?
Oh, of course.
And so there's something that we're looking for in the perfection of directing that's different than what we're looking for in the process of writing. Right?
Uh-huh.
And sometimes in directing, we're looking for, you know, better movement on stage. We're looking for more authentic relationships between the characters. We're looking for a deeper sense of drama. Whereas when you're writing, you can often say, well, I feel like I've already drawn the reader to that thematic topic. I want to develop a newer thematic topic that still makes sense in the overall structure of the play.
Uh-huh.
You know? So it's fascinating to look at these, to look at, you know, as an artist, okay, I got the Lit Space Grant residency. I can write in it or direct in it. And I actually did both.
Oh, that's great.
If you were ever to ask me, you know, do I love being a director more or do I love being a writer more? I sort of think that they're all within the greater topic of being a theater artist. So I don't choose one or the other. I say that I'm a theater artist, and this is what I do.
Oh, you're so smart. Oh, you are so smart. That I'm thrilled to hear that. I always imagine that the director is really just writing the skin of a play, and the writer is actually just directing the words into place for everyone else. So you've hit the nail on the head where there's no such thing as delineating. It's we're all theater artists.
Well, you know, in fact, there are many different ways to think about this. And some people think that they're very, very different disciplines. But where I am as an artist is I think that they actually interdepend on each other quite a bit, and that it's not too much to have one person be a writer and a director of a singular piece. So I think that's sort of terrific. And when I think ahead about the Lit Space Grant residency, it's great that now, not as a writer or director, but as an administrator, what I'm able to do is actually be the coordinator of the Lit Space Grant residency program for other artists.
Oh, that's great.
So, yes. So this is through the League of Independent Theater. And I'm so proud that with the League of Independent Theater, we work with artists working in 99 seat theaters. And these artists can apply for the grant just like I did.
Oh, that's great.
And they can... Yeah, they can write a new play, they can direct their play, they can work on choreography, music, design, they can do any of that with their residency hours. And with the League of Independent Theaters Lit Space Grant residency, they can also produce a show. And then if they choose to have it published, great. If it's only for a single production, that's also fine. So they can absolutely use this, and it's only for downtown theater artists, Jay.
Uh-huh.
It's not for big Broadway. It's not for off-Broadway. It's for those working in 99-seat theaters.
Right.
Whether they're actors, directors, writers, designers, choreographers. So this is what I'm really proud of this year. And, you know, we look at the struggles of years past, and those struggles were there.
It sounds to me like your residency is really perfecting the art of being an independent artist.
Exactly. Well said. Very, very, very well said. It is about being an independent theater artist. And indie means a lot to a lot of people. And so when we look at independent theater artists, you know, we do work within the bounds of some organizational structure that's been there before. But the independent dream is within all of the projects. So
that's great.
Be able to, yeah, to dream up in that way is very, very important. You know, a lot of people think, oh, 99-seat theaters, that's great. You know, it's not Broadway. Well,
thank you. Oh my gosh, thank you. I scream this. People tend to apologize for their work. Oh, I'm doing this for exposure. Oh, I'm workshopping it. No, here is the piece of art. Enjoy the art now. It may grow, it may not, but here is the art now. Oh, I'm so happy to hear that's a focus of yours. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah. And I think that collaborative work happens over time. So when you think about the now, right, and who really has the now, you know, these shows take time, and they take really diligent people every day sort of tending to the process of it. So, you know, the same artist who does a show in a 99-seat theater may choose to work in a much larger venue later. That's cool, you know? I think that it's terrific that art can thrive in either size venue.
That's great.
I think that it's really great. But, you know, when work is independent, it means that, you know, we can choose thematic topics. We can choose material.
Right.
We can, you know, speak from our gut. And this is very, very important. So it's not like, oh, you know, we have to go ahead and do another jukebox musical. You know, we all loved this when it was a movie. Now we have to go ahead and sort of kind of reinterpret it and represent it. You know, this way instead, the issues, the topics, the themes can all come from the gut. And it doesn't have to be experimental in format. It could have a very traditional structure. But it's the work on stage, and it matters.
That's great. And that's perfectly put. Yeah. Work on stage, and that matters. What's next for you? What's in the future?
Well, I am going to be developing two short plays in the near future. And I tell you, I'm really, really proud that that work happens over time with great people. So like I said, with Village My Home, I worked with a company, a cast and crew of up to 15 people. And it was really a great effort. So when I go ahead, and it's going to be in 2019,
right,
to develop two new works. So right now, and this could change, but right now it's a act one and act two. So they're actually two separate works, but in a single evening.
Uh-huh.
So when that happens, I hope to work with at least 10 great artists.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Again. Yeah. And so, you know, we really want to go into the rehearsal room, be very determined that, you know, we're setting forward to meet all of our goals and objectives, to really, you know, appreciate and understand the material that we're working with, and really speak from our gut as we tackle the material.
That's wonderful. That's really wonderful.
Yeah.
That's energizing. That's energizing to say the least.
Marcina,
thank
the
you.
The creation of new work is amazing. It's amazing.
And thank you for saying that, because that's the capper to it all. Thank you so much for your time. This has been enlightening and absolutely wonderful. And you've just solidified so many things that need to be said. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jay.
I will tell our listeners exactly where they can get a copy of your play and how they can produce it and all other good things like that. And yes, if you would like to send me something on the residency program that I can announce on the air, I would be more than happy to.
Terrific.
And just thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
My pleasure. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. So. Take it easy.
Well, there you have it. You are not alone. Two published and produced playwrights share services that can make life a little easier in your journey. Speaking of playwrights, next time we will speak with two names to remember, a novelist and a playwright whose stars are rising at a great rate, Christopher Struck and Doug DeVita. See you then. Same time, same channel.